Hello, and welcome back to the Book Gores Pod. We are on episode 19, and we are talking about the Kanan comics this week. So that would be The Last Padawan and First Blood, both by Greg Weisman. And I'm Kate, and I'm here with Chris and Kristen. And as we always do, what are people drinking today?
What are you guys drinking?
Well, I am technically drinking a Rage Litmus State Syrah from 2012, except Ooh. It, like, went bad.
Yeah, and it, like, so, turned. It's very sad.
No, it just, like...
oxidized. Ooh.
Yeah, it kind of tastes like swole wine. Well, okay, it's Syrah mixed with Viognier, and so now it just tastes like apples and vinegar, and I'm not classy, so I'm just going balls to the face on this.
Yeah, I mean, oxidized wine isn't going to kill you, actually. It's fine.
Yeah.
No, it just tastes bad, which makes me sad, because we had a first bottle of this, and it was amazing, but oh well.
I bet it was. It sounds great.
Yeah, well, you can have some when you
are you both drinking that?
No, I'm drinking a Lime LaCroix.
Oh, yum.
Well, green. Okay, it's actually
green. It's green flavored.
It's actually okay. It's actually a green giant brand seltzer water.
Oh, yum. Yeah, that's better. It's fine.
Because I spent all my money on avocado toast. I don't have money for real LaCroix. but no, I went to Kristen. Oh, I went to Recessions earlier, and
oh, I love Recessions.
Do you? Does anyone love Recessions?
Oh my god. DC Bar Talk.
I love it in that it's in DC. But continue.
I mean, it's better than Stoney's on L. So.
Yes.
Oh my god. That is
not friend of the pod.
Not friend of the pod, Stoney's on L.
Except the Stoney's. So what are you drinking?
Oh, okay. Ready?
Yes.
I'm drinking, I can't even call this LaCroix a color because it's mango, and the mango one is like green and orange. So I'm drinking a mango LaCroix. And if you guys did not know, which you maybe did or didn't, but it's fresh hop season here in Oregon, Washington. So Ooh. Everybody's doing their fucking harvesting and like pretty much just like making beer around the clock, because any fresh hop beer, you need to, if you're not going to do anything with the hops right after harvest, you really need to get them going like right now. So
right.
I am drinking a beer that only from one of my favorite breweries, Fort George, which is in Astoria, Oregon. So it's a special edition IPA, and it's a fresh hopped IPA, and it is called Suicide Squeeze, and it has a picture of a snack on it, and,
a snack!
It's delicious, and they only come out with it, like, once a year, so, you know, during fresh hop season. So we're all getting our fucking weird fresh hop on. It's so great. All the...
Sounds glorious.
All the dankiest, hoppiest beers, so... I had earlier a barrel aged saison that was aged in white wine barrels, and then I had a margarita from a dive bar, and now I'm having a suicide squeeze. So it's a great night.
Nice.
That saison sounds so fucking good. Oh my god,
it was really good. I thought it was gonna be a little bit more like white winey. It wasn't. I think it was. I don't want to like. Nobody's going to fact check me on this, but I'd like to be correct at least about what I'm talking about. I think it was a collaboration between Block 15 and Bailey's Tap Room for their Saison aged in white wine barrels, and I'm forgetting the name of it. But shout out to Bailey's Tap Room in Portland, Oregon. It's the shit.
Yay.
A very good wine or beer list and cider list. So we'll go there when you guys come, whatever that is. I'm making it up in my
eventually.
Head.
Eventually.
Whenever you want. So happy fresh hop season, everybody. I think we're gonna probably try to go to the fresh hop festival anytime soon. So it's just a little beer fest with fresh hop, so it's very exciting.
Delightful. Mm-hmm. All right, shall we dive in?
Let's do it.
Chris is just like have this video where he's just like, I am talking into the floor, I am moving myself to the microphone and saying it again.
Yep.
Proud of you. All right, so obviously these comics tell the backstory of Kanan Jarrus from Star Wars Rebels, whom we've been talking about quite a bit since we just finished reading A New Dawn by John Jackson Miller. And if you missed those episodes, definitely go back and check out the previous four of them. I can't count.
Yeah, four.
But, yeah, previous four episodes. We spent four lovely episodes talking about him and Hera because... Canara.
Yep.
That would be episodes 15 through 18.
Right, numbers. Thank you. So, so we learn a whole lot about Kanan's past in these comics. And so the first thing I want to talk about is just Kanan's identity, because we learn that when he was a Padawan at the Jedi Temple before Order 66, he was named Caleb Doom. And then after Order 66, after he escaped and survived, he obviously had to come up with an alias because he is a fugitive. And basically had to totally reinvent himself. So let's dive in.
Yeah, Chris, because you're a good numbers boy. One of the things that struck me about this that I didn't quite realize was that Caleb Doom was actually like a very young Padawan. I should have like been able to do the math and figure that out. But he was pretty young for a Padawan. So can you give us just like, or Kate, if you know, but Chris tends to be the timeline keeper as far as like, for some reason, knowing every year in the in that universe.
Having OCD, it's fine.
Yeah, having OCD, yeah.
You know, no, I mean, I want to say he was like 13.
13 when he becomes a Padawan, and then I think he's with Deppa for...
Not super long. No more than a year.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I think he's 14 when Order 66 happens, so if I'm not mistaken.
Because the Clone Wars had already been going for a while.
Yeah. How old is
when
Ahsoka?
When he became a Padawan.
When she becomes
Ahsoka,
a Padawan.
Ahsoka, when she becomes a Padawan, she's 14. So he's okay. He's a little on the young side, but not super much on the young side. I think
well, and
Deppa
I assume
mentions...
Ahsoka was probably also on the young side. She's bae.
Right, because she's amazing. Yeah. I mean, Deppa mentions that they're kind of bringing initiates up into Padawans faster because of the Clone Wars, and I think that's part of the reason why he got bumped up so quickly.
She doesn't mention... I don't know that she mentioned that they're doing that overall. She mentions that she is doing it to him. Mm. Like, she's kind of like, you're too young for this, but these are the times we live in. Like, I kind of jumped the line, which is why his friends were, you know, jealous and susceptible to the dark side.
Mm-hmm. So they were... I don't know.
Thank you. Sorry. That is from a me not knowing the timeline and wanting to know it.
I think that's a super legitimate question because, I mean, there's so much we actually don't know about the Jedi Order, honestly, that, you know, I think we kind of have to grasp at these little bones were thrown.
Yeah. But so yeah. He's 13 the last time we really know him is Caleb Doom, 13, 14. Mm-hmm. And then he's 19 or 20. 21?
We
see him for the first time in...
He would be 23, because it's 9 years after Order 66.
He's 20.
New Dawn.
He's 22.
22?
Yeah.
22, sorry.
Yeah, this is why I asked. Okay. So,
he's 22 in New Dawn.
Okay, so it's like, 9 years, which is what Chris just said, but I just want to wrap my head around that. Okay.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
Thank you. Thanks, everybody.
It's good to know. Sure thing.
But yeah, it's interesting, though, because you do have this, like, you can really see young Kanan in Caleb. Like, obviously, he's Caleb, and he's, like, different, and he's, like, a different person, in a way. And he talks about that, how, like, Caleb Doom died on Collar, and, you know, now he is Kanan Jarrus. But you do see young Kanan in Caleb. You see that reckless streak and that, like... You know, we talked a little bit about it last episode, but that, like, fuck everything streak that he has in his lost years, so to speak.
Right. What's interesting to me is that, you know, he's known for being the temple troublemaker and always asking all these, like, questions that he genuinely wants to know the answers to them, but he's also a little impertinent about it, which is kind of fun to see in him. And, you know, that obviously that's kind of where his... wittiness and, like Chris was saying, that kind of reckless personality was born. But there's this point where it's towards the beginning of The Last Padawan where she's kind of questioning why the Jedi got involved in the war in the first place and whether or not this is really what they should be doing. And he said, and you know, Caleb says, you know, are you questioning the decision of the Jedi Council? It's either Deppa or one of the clones who's just like, weren't you known back at the temple for asking too many questions? He's like, yeah, but I never, like, questioned the Jedi Order. And then he starts to, after after Order 66, when you've got Janice Kazmir asking him, did they ever teach you anything useful at the temple? He's like, no, I guess not, you know, and it kind of goes on from there. I think that plants the seed for him to throw away his old life for that period of time when he's lost.
No, I was going to bring up at least that, I don't know that I was going to bring up exactly the same point as you, but I was going to bring up how, like, that exchange kind of had me grappling with, like, is he splitting hairs about, because he kind of draws this distinction, Kanan draws this distinction between, or I guess it's Caleb at this point, draws this distinction between questioning the process and, like, how they got to an answer, but not questioning the answer itself.
Correct.
Am I reading that right? Yeah. So
yeah, absolutely.
I was reading that, and I was like, okay, but, like, how different is that? Like, is he splitting hairs here? But, like, as a 13-year-old kid, I can totally get how, like, those are very different things. And also, that's, like, a very complex thing, I think, for a 13-year-old to kind of understand.
Right. I think when you're 13, you're just getting to that point where you... It's that age where you realize that, like, your parents are people... And not everything, like, you shouldn't take everything that you've been told at face value. He's just right at that age, and it's kind of interesting that that's where everything changes for him, because then he is super forced to question everything.
Chris, yeah, and it's
interesting. Did she do heavy air quotes around people?
She did not do the air quotes around people.
Okay, because I choose to use the word people because that's what Jin calls other... every sentient living species.
Oh, no, I didn't mean like
that.
I meant, oh, okay.
I didn't mean like that. I meant, did she put what figures out there?
Oh, parents are people?
Yeah.
Parents aren't people. Yeah, no, my mistake. You're right.
Sorry. That's our parents are problematic. inside joke there. Sorry, guys.
Okay. It's so real.
It's therapy day.
Listeners, don't worry. I don't understand either.
It is therapy day. Anyway.
But no, it's super interesting because, like, you do have this, like, kind of growth of Kanan intellectually and, like, Kate, like you said, this whole coming of age thing. But then you have, on the other hand, Depa, and I know that we have her a little later in the outline, but, like, since we're talking about her now, I see a lot of Qui-Gon Jinn in her.
Fuck yeah.
And, like, you kind of have her is like this kind of advancement of Jedi thinking in that, like, you have the Jedi who, like, are all coming to this decision to, you know, fight in the war and take military titles, be generals. And you have her who's, like, very openly being like, no, I think this is a bad idea. And I think this is not the Jedi way. And I think that we need to be, like, different in how we respond to these things, and it's a very Qui-Gon attitude to me.
Absolutely,
totally. It's interesting because I didn't even pick up on that. Sorry, all the background noise you hear is Quinn just Kool-Aid
Man.
Oh
no, I assumed that.
Yeah, Quinn just Kool-Aid Man through the door with our dinner, so I'm very excited. And he's getting beer out of the fridge, which he absolutely should. No, but my thought was, I had not even, like, considered the merits of the Jedi Order taking military titles. Like, I don't know if that's just me being small-minded or what, but I hadn't thought about it until Master Depa, like, is it Depa?
Depa, yep.
Depa, yeah, until Master Depa, like, brought that point up as, like, problematic.
Right, and I think it's another way that the non-film media really complicating what we're seeing on the screen, because I think we've talked about this a little bit, about how in the original trilogy, we kind of take at face value that the Jedi are good and the Sith are bad and there's a light side and a dark side and all this stuff. But we're finding a lot of gray as we're reading all these materials, and we talked a bit about that. Was it last episode? I definitely talked about when we were talking about A New Dawn.
Yeah,
I think it was two episodes ago.
Yeah, I think it was episode 17, our last one on, like, our episode on the last section of A New Dawn before the wrap-up.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I completely agree. Like, you have this further examination, let's say, of the Jedi legacy and of the Jedi as they existed, and you have it in real time, so to speak, and so it's not this idealized version of Days Long Guy before the dark times. Like, you have...
before the Empire.
Exactly. Oh, I haven't heard that name since I cut your father's legs off and threw him into a volcano.
God damn it.
but you do have this, like, introspection that you don't really see among the Jedi, because it's become very groupthinky, and that, like...
Yes.
I'm very interested to see how the... well, I mean, the film media, too, I think we're going to get a lot of this in The Last Jedi, but also... like the non-screen media, how we're going to get this further examination of the Jedi's legacy and how they were, you know, corrupted in their own way. Obviously not by the Sith, but in their own way, they were no longer purely the Jedi. And that's something we've talked about in the past too.
Yeah. You saying that their group thinking is interesting to me, because when Caleb says you're questioning the Jedi High Council, like Deppa sits on the council. Like it's made up of several people. They're not like this giant, like this octopus that thinks in unison, you know.
She is the Jedi High Council, you might say.
Okay, anyway.
Well, but yeah, okay, sorry. I was processing over here and I realized my thing was stupid. Just to backtrack just a little bit. I mean, I know we talked about this obviously falls under like shades of gray as we were talking about, but what I noticed just to contrast that a little bit is, like, yes, totally the on-screen media is so much better about like exploring the shades of gray, but what made me laugh is, like, with the comics, they're still opened with like a crawl, and I think, like,
yes,
it says like the evil Palpatine, and I'm like, oh, so it's like, because it's borrowing this thing from, like, the movies, it's still, like, very much kind of, like, this, at least this beginning part, the beginning crawl, is still kind of, like, boxed in by that, like, black and whiteness.
Which is always hilarious to me, because only Sith deal in absolutes.
I know.
You hurt me inside. That's actually really interesting, though, how they complicate that. That is fascinating. I don't really know if I have anything to say about that.
Yeah, I mean,
but
I'm
definitely going to think about it.
I didn't really, like, have anything to say about it either.
No, I
just kind of brought it up because I, like, noticed it this time. I was like, oh, yeah, like, the crawl. And the crawl is still, like, very crawl-like, even though it's before a comic, which is always more complicated than whatever else we're talking about.
Right, yeah. No, I like that observation. I think we should, like percolate on that, especially because I think the next time we're reading the comics, we're going back to
we're gonna go back to Star Wars and Darth Vader.
Yeah, so I think those will be really good times to talk about.
Yeah,
that.
I mean, one other thing that I would just want to add there is this actually really reminds me to a really fantastic blog post on the 1138 blog that was written by, I believe his name was David Schwartz, and particularly a comment that was left on that. And I unfortunately don't know the person's name, but it was the first comment left on it, and they promoted it on the 1138 Twitter.
Oh, darn, I can't remember this person's name.
His name was John. He didn't have a last name or a screen name, I don't think.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, stay with us. I have a point, I swear. Basically, the main point, the post itself was about the history of fascism versus anti-fascism in Star Wars, and it was kind of inspired by the whole Claudia Gray Strength Through Joy mistake that happened in Princess of Alderaan. And it was about kind of the history of, is Star Wars fascist or anti-fascist or both? And the point of the comment was basically like, it's neither, because Star Wars is at its heart something that is so simplistic that it's anti-modern, and it, like, the themes and the, like, morals in it are so pre-modern that, like, fascism doesn't even begin to come into play. It's kind of an interesting dichotomy and an interesting thing that they're struggling with right now in Star Wars media, in a way, because they are trying to delve into these deeper themes and this concept of gray and this concept of good versus evil and what is the force and the nature of all things, when at the end of the day, as George Lucas said at Star Wars Celebration, it's a story for 10-year-olds. Like, this is a story, like, this is a universe based in a story of good and evil. And I think one really interesting thing that Lucasfilm is doing in all its media right now is trying to reconcile that with the more complicated stories that they want to tell.
Totally.
But
also, you guys are all good. It's literally just John. I looked it up. It's just John. He has no,
thank you.
No
that's
other.
That's what I thought. Well, no, by the time anything. You listen to this, we will bump up that article and
yes.
comment. You should
yes.
really read them both. They're very well researched and well reasoned and fascinating.
Yeah, they're super, super interesting.
We'll stick those in the description so you guys
yes.
can see them. But
I was gonna go on some more English nerd talk, but you know, I'm just gonna, like, put that aside because no one wants to hear it.
No, I do.
Oh, I'm just going to talk about Joseph Campbell and no one cares.
We do. It's like a founding, like...
No. I mean, Star Wars. I mean, no, that's true. All right, fine, I'll do it.
I was going to say, also, like, this is Book Wars Pod, so you're allowed to be as much of a literature nerd if you would like to be.
Guys, I'm, like, trying to finalize my applications for grad school so I can learn how to write really, real good, and this is where my brain's at.
Side note, our goal for Kate's career is for her to write a Star Wars book.
Kate's a real good writer. TM.
What I was going to say was that one of the points that the blog post that Chris was talking about makes is that George Lucas borrowed heavily from Joseph Campbell's seminal work called Hero with a Thousand Faces. And basically his entire argument in that book is that there is one monomyth about the hero's journey. And you can see it in pretty much any story that comes out of Western civilization. It doesn't really work for other cultures because Joseph Campbell was also a raging racist, but it's interesting to look at nonetheless. And, you know, if we're talking about good and evil, we're talking about obviously very classic archetypes, and basically Campbell's work goes all the way back to the Greeks, the Greek mythology, and if you're interested in it, just that kind of storytelling and the history of storytelling and patterns of storytelling, it's worth like taking a glimpse, if not at the book, because again, Joseph Campbell was a raging racist, then definitely Google it and just, you know, follow. I think it's like something like 13 steps in the hero's journey. Look it up. Like, it matches Star Wars, it matches Harry Potter, it matches Lord of the Rings. It's just interesting. Yeah. But anyway.
Yeah. I think there's some like good commentary you can even get on that.
Yeah,
like,
totally.
Like, that book, like, with commentary. Like, it's fucking Shakespeare.
It's cool.
Sorry.
Yeah. No, we'll see if we can...
Love-hate relationship with books that have commentaries. We can get into that at a later time.
Right. Yeah. We'll see if we can, like, in the intervening days between when we record this and when we post it, if we can find some good articles relating The Hero of a Thousand Faces to Star Wars, just to give folks that background. I know they exist.
I got it covered. Don't worry about it. I'll find it for you guys.
Perfect.
Anyway. So going back
to the content you actually tuned in for.
So one of the questions that we put a hold on when we were talking about A New Dawn is name changes, and specifically Kanan's word transformation is coming to me. That's not the word I want. I don't care. How he turns from Caleb Doom into Kanan Jarrus, and what his two names may or may not delineate. And Chris, I feel like you had thoughts on this because you're the one who wanted to kind of like put a pause on that talk.
Well, we also talked a little bit about it last episode in our wrap up, but I mean, it's interesting because you always have this dichotomy with a lot of the characters who change their names, but I feel like it's very potent in Kanan because he's one of the people who has a choice in changing his name, and not everybody has that. Like, obviously, when we talked about the other characters who changed their name, Anakin has a choice, but he's also seduced by the dark side, and, you know, after he has this fight with Obi-Wan, he is Darth Vader. He can't go back to Anakin Skywalker because he's a robot.
Also, he can't change his name because Palpatine is literally like, I'm going to call you this, and he's just like, cool, man. Yeah.
But like, cool, and then, man. Make sure, and then Leia, obviously...
Make sure my wife doesn't die, thanks.
Right. And then Leia, obviously, she's Leia Organa, and like, that's just who she is, and she, by the time she learns who her father is, you know, she's not going to change her name and be Leia Skywalker. And Han Solo, we'll see what happens in the upcoming Han Solo movie, but like Kanan...
Organa's a better last name.
Organa is a better last name.
Accurate. Anyway.
But like, for Kanan, he makes this choice to not be Caleb Doom anymore, and it's interesting because you have this dichotomy of, in being a conscious choice, he can't let go of it, in a way. But because he made the choice to not be Caleb Doom, Caleb Doom, by definition, still has to exist in him.
Well, here's my... Did he really have a choice, though? Because he couldn't go around under that name. They had records of who the Jedi were.
Well, he had a choice. I would say, like, just to kind of bridge the gap between, I think, what you both are saying, and tell me to fuck off if I'm wrong, but I think he
always.
Had...
You know we will.
I love it when you do that. I think, you know, there's two sides of it, right? He obviously did not have a choice in not being Caleb Doom any longer, but he did have a choice in who he became.
And I would also, I 100% agree with you, Keeks, and just to like kind of plus one on that, he also had a choice to not only take a different name, but truly adopt a new identity.
Yeah.
And that is a choice. Like he chose to change his name, but he also chose to leave Caleb Doom behind.
Sure.
As a personality.
And of course, there's the question of whether or not he really does adopt a completely new identity.
Well, exactly. That's exactly what I'm saying.
Right.
That because that was a choice that he was capable of making, he is simultaneously incapable of fully leaving Caleb Doom behind.
Okay, hold that for 5 minutes because we're going to talk about Janice Casimir a second. Just the last part of me talking about Kanan versus Caleb. Just basically, like, I'm just, again, talking about, you know, because Kanan really draws a line in his history between these two phases of his life. And so I'm just trying to determine, like, what he carries over, what's different about him. We've talked a little bit about this already, but,
you know. Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely that rebellious streak he had as a child, clearly. Mm-hmm. It's hard. It's hard to think because, like, you think about his, like, youthful not understanding of consequences that he kind of has, like, right up until the point where Stance dies, his clone trooper friend.
Yeah.
CT-1157, I want to say.
I think you're right. Nice.
Yeah, right? Oh, pull that out.
Chris is a Ravenclaw. So, like, that's kind we got of, it, Chris. Thank you.
Yep, you're so welcome. But, like, that's really the first time he understands consequences. But you also kind of see in older Kanan, he understands consequences, but he just doesn't care.
Yep. That's so
like,
true.
And particularly pre-A New Dawn Kanan.
You mean pre-Rebels Kanan?
Yeah, pre-Rebels Kanan. Yeah. Like, Kanan that we meet at the beginning of A New Dawn. But you still do see a little bit of that in Rebels. Like, obviously, he cares about some things. He certainly cares about Hera and the crew, the entire crew of the Ghost. But he doesn't really care about other things. And that's, like, a fight that he and Hera had when at the beginning of Season 2 of Rebels when they were joining the Rebellion. Like, he was like, I don't care about the Rebellion. I care about us, and I care about, you know, helping the people of Lothal and, like, not being part of a larger thing.
Yeah, I think that's really key to his character. Absolutely. And, like, it's not like the skills he got from being a Jedi weren't transferable to his life in the Rebellion. They just kind of laid latent for a while he was on the run and hiding. You know, he had all those skills of being a tactician and like, his rusty-ass Jedi skills that don't become very good until, like, the end of Season 2, because, oh my god. But yeah,
that's
he
so
just,
funny.
I know, but he's, it's almost like, I mean, the lightsaber skills and his force-wielding skills are obviously a lot of muscle and mental memory for him, but he never loses that mind for just analyzing goddamn everything, and that probably saved his life on more than one occasion. So,
one thing I want to do at some point is, like, how we've talked about how when Rebels comes back, we want to do some mini-sodes on Thrawn and his development and how it changes how we look at the books and how we look at past seasons.
Are doing Kanera?
No, I want to look at Kanan after Han Solo comes out.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Because I like these comics especially gave me a lot of Han Solo vibes. And, like,
oh, for sure.
This could easily be how Han Solo was born. Like, the persona of Han Solo was born.
Yeah, totally.
Just without, you know, force sensitivity.
Right.
Yeah. And so I really want to compare and contrast them.
It's funny. You were like, without force sensitivity. And I was like, oh, I thought you were going to say without regard to anything.
Yeah. No. Well, I mean, it's funny wrong. Because they both end up married to space moms.
I know.
It's true. Oh, I mean, no wonder I love Kanan so much. He's just like Han, but less of a dickhead.
Yeah.
Or, like, more of a dickhead sometimes.
Yeah. Totally. You know. You're not wrong.
Bofa.
Well, and also, like, is he going to fulfill the Han third iteration of Sad Dad TM?
I was just talking to someone. I was just talking to someone the most today. But I'll give her a shout-out later because she's great. But we were just talking about how we're just so afraid Kanan's going to die because Star Wars fucking loves killing off their dad figures, and we're just, like, wailing about it. But, you know, it's fine.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, Star Wars loves, like, killing everybody, but yes.
Accurate.
I mean, speaking of shit that Star Wars loves, that'd be some fucking ring theory if Kanan, who was, like, Han Solo before Han Solo existed, his son became Snoke, who then corrupted Han Solo's
Stop.
Son.
Stop.
Oh my god, end my life. I hate you. That's horrible.
Ring theory.
Oh, I'm so upset. Anyway, moving right along. So, going further back in time, in the timeline of Kanan's life, let's talk a little bit about his influences. So, obviously, pretty much the only teacher we get to see of Kanan's in Rebels is the Bendu. But before that, of course, there was Depa and there was Janis Kazmir. So, let's chat about them. Do we want to start with Depa or do we want to start with Janis? Because we were already just talking about him.
I think, well, how much else do we have to say about Depa? Because we already talked about her.
I just wanted to...
I have Depa feelings, but we don't really... I mean, they're not really well-formed. They're just...
I mean, that's... I mean, I can vamp while you collect your
thoughts. Oh, no, I just mean, let's keep talking about Janis Kazmir.
Is this podcast well-formed? Like...
Fuck yeah.
Are we creating that as a requirement now? Because we have to delete some episodes.
It would be if 1/3 of this podcast would ever read the outline before recording. But
I ain't saying shit. All right, fine. I'll talk about Depa because Chris doesn't think something more to be said. But...
Damn.
Depa's a great mom.
Depa is a great mom. Oh my god, I have so many. I also have so many big feelings about what a fucking fantastic mom Depa is and how fucking sad I was when she died. Oh, it was just like, it's so much. Like, her just, like, constantly, just, like, Caleb just being super impertinent and just asking all these, like, asshole really specific questions and her just, like, giggling in the background. And just a bit of trivia that I'm not sure the comics made clear, but Mace Windu was her master when she was a Padawan.
I didn't actually know that either.
Yeah, so He's Caleb's like grandmaster or whatever. Which is, you want to call it.
You actually see him in the comics like being really like fucking forlorn.
I know. Also him being like him just like looking at Depa like my fucking daughter, like why do you have to be like this and shit like that, and yeah. It's just really, really hysterical.
Exactly.
It's perfect how like you can just like see him just like facepalming constantly. No, but I love the relationship that we have, the way she encourages him to grow, and just not only, like, I think she really teaches him not only to ask questions, but to ask, like, the right questions, you know?
Yeah. She encourages his question asking, unlike most other people that we see.
Yes, yes.
And then she questions his question asking, which is great.
Yeah, I mean, I think she really teaches him how to think, and again, I think that's something that saves his life, because, like, when you're on your own and you're 14, like, how do you... And you've been given no real life skills? Like, how do you survive? It's by having that kind of a mind, honestly.
One other aspect of Depa... See, I found something else I wanted to say about Depa.
Good for you!
One other aspect of Depa that I think is fascinating and really sets her apart from the rest of the Jedi Council is her self-introspection. Like, she is very aware that she's broken. Like... And that's... That level of vulnerability is not something we get from any other Jedi. Like, certainly not Mace Windu or Yoda, who, like, we're gonna, I'm sure, talk about them in the future, but they are guilty of a lot of malpractice of being a little too in love with themselves. And, like, even Obi-Wan, like, you see him being very confident, and when he's older, you see him being even more confident that he's right.
Right, like, he thinks about his relationship with Satine for 0.5 seconds, and that's the only vulnerability we really get.
Yeah. And, like, old Obi-Wan, like, you have, you know, him being so sure that Anakin is irredeemable, that Darth Vader is irredeemable, that Luke is the chosen one. All these things that, like, we know not to be true, really.
Well, and Anakin being the chosen one. But
yeah. Anakin being the chosen one at the time. And then he's like, oh, no, I was wrong. Luke is the chosen one. When, like, really, like, that's also not necessarily true. And, like... Just having all these strong opinions, all these, like, you never see Obi-Wan really struggle with his own vulnerability the way Depa does. Maybe that's what we'll get if they do end up making the rumored Obi-Wan in the desert movie, like him struggling with his vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
But you do get that from Depa, and I feel like that's a great role model for Kanan and looking at the struggles that Kanan goes through in Rebels when he's trying to be Ezra's master.
Totally. Totally. I also think it's interesting that we've talked a little bit before about how we don't get a whole lot of mother figures in Star Wars, or at least positive ones, or ones that don't just keel over and die immediately. Not that Deppa lasts very long, but, you know.
We at least know she had a timeline that mattered, right?
Right, exactly. And
I don't
want
to, minimize any of the other... I don't mean to insinuate that any of the other mother figures didn't matter, but she has a timeline that, you know, we at least can envision.
Right. So, we don't get a lot of mother figures in Star Wars. We don't get a lot of really close time with fully fledged Jedi Knights who are female either. So, yeah. I just think it's really significant that Kanan's this, you know, by the time we get to Rebels, he's this really strong, like, father figure for both Sabine and Ezra, and, you know, he's a great space husband and all this other stuff, and, you know, that wouldn't have been possible without, you know, him knowing 100% that Deppa was going to be there for him. I don't think he'd ever had a figure in his life like that.
Yeah, agreed.
And then the other thing I want to say is that when she's fighting Grievous, she says something like, the Jedi that you defeated before is dead, and this is a completely new one. And that's definitely a mirror for Kanan. Not only just discarding his identity as Caleb Doom, but also him coming back into himself and deciding that, yeah, he's a Jedi and this is his legacy and he's going to train Ezra.
I feel like there's a lot of that in all fiction, frankly, and particularly genre fiction, but also in Star Wars, like Anakin. Like, Anakin's dead. He is now Vader. Like, the old person you knew is dead. The old Obi-Wan is dead. Like, now he's Ben.
Right, right.
Like, get a lot of these, like, rebirths.
Rebirth themes, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Sorry, I feel like my theme of this episode is, as we said 35 seconds ago before you guys made this other point, I mean, something that, I'm just going to bring up something that struck me about Deppa and Kanan, like, that whole situation being totally heartbreaking, is, like, he, as a 13, 14-year-old, he, like, takes the directive to, 12, 13-year-old. He takes the directive to run to heart, kind of, through the whole first volume of these comics, right?
And, yeah, and it comes up in Rebels, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of mirroring, especially at Fire Across the Galaxy in the episode that comes before, which I can't remember what the fuck it's called. At the end, basically the last two episodes of season one, I was like super, super wailing when we were doing the rewatch, because at the end of the penultimate episode where he's telling Ezra to get in the lift and go to the top of the tower so that Hera can come pick them up and they can all escape the Inquisitor, he tells Ezra, you know, get in the elevator, I'll be right behind you, which is basically what Deppa said to him.
Yeah.
Like right before she died, and I was like, fuck me up. And then, like, the Inquisitor's, like, torturing him, and he's just like, what were your master's last words to you? And Kanan's like, don't at me.
Definitely.
Horrible. I have so many fucking Kanan feelings. It's fine.
No, totally. Yeah, I didn't really have, like, anything, like, too, you know, thoughtful to say about that, other than, like, it was very heartbreaking to see that happen over and over again. And
it
him
was.
Just, like, look, well, right, because he's, like, this kid, and he hasn't even found his new identity yet, and he just keeps saying, like, what was the last thing, you know, anytime he's at a loss, he's like, what was the last thing I was told to do, and it was like, oh, run, great. And then he feels, like, shit about it.
Right, and, that's a whole lot of guilt that you feel in him. In A New Dawn, definitely, and especially in Rebels, as he's starting to train Ezra, he's just like, what kind of a fucking master am I? Like, I didn't even do anything to save my master, you know?
Yeah, I think one thing that these comics, and particularly that scene in, I guess, issues 1 and 2 of the Kanan comic, where you have the clone troopers receiving Order 66, it really just drives home how difficult it has to be to be a survivor of Order 66, and just how, like, it was traumatic for us fucking watching it as fucking people living in the real world, and we're seeing all the Jedi get killed.
I still cry.
Like, imagine, like, and this, more than anything, really gives us an incredible view of what it was like to be there and to live it and to see these people who, not 10 seconds ago, you were laughing with and were your friends and calling you kid, just turn on a dime and try to murder you and murder everybody you've ever known.
I know. It's so fucked up. Yeah, you. I will say, so just a little preview for y'all listening, after Inferno Squad, we're going to be reading the Ahsoka novel, and you get a lot of that in the Ahsoka novel, like that survivor's guilt. So we're definitely going to be talking a lot more about that later on.
I'm excited.
Can we move on to talking about Janice?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right.
Woo.
So Janice Kazmir, I think I've alluded to this a little bit when we were talking about A New Dawn, but he's kind of Kanan's namesake. When Kanan's choosing his new name, he just kind of like mishmashes. Yeah, he does that, and he mishmashes a bunch of syllables together, and he creates Kanan Jarrus. And I think, oh god, what are the asshole...
Yeah, Gamut...
Was it Tapis, or was
it... No, it was Gamut Key.
Yeah, who says, like, oh, did you... Like,
Jarrus or Janice?
Yes.
Like, he... I think he knows who Kanan is.
I know, which was just like god damn it.
They never make it clear, but I think he knows who Kanan is and, like, recognized Kanan, and that's, like, why he let it all happen.
Right, totally. Right. I need them to do another miniseries on Kanan, because I want to know more about that weird shit, and I want to know more about the ship that Kanan has hit.
I want season 4 to take us to Collar. It won't, but I want it to.
I want so much information about that ship.
I know, right? Fuck me.
What happened to the escape?
The escape.
Okay.
Kanan, did you crash it?
I know.
Did Kanan break it?
Probably.
Darth Vader will come back from the dead, find that ship later, and crash
destroy
it.
I know, right?
Seriously.
It's fine. These are all different timelines, but I want it to happen.
Right. So I guess Depa was this... kind of moralizing sort of shaping force. Like she really helped shape Kanan's core identity. But Janice, on the other hand, taught Kanan a lot of skills that actually came in handy, obviously during his life on the run, but also during the rebellion, because Janice was a smuggler and black market dealer. And you know, when we first start Rebels, we see them doing all these kinds of missions that really involve those kinds of business relationships and those kind of tactics.
Hashtag milk run.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So I guess my question about Janice especially, and we can talk about other things about him, obviously, but how does Janice help Kanan get from Order 66 to who he is in A New Dawn?
I mean, I think showing him kindness in a time when everyone's trying... I mean, it's obvious, right? It feels like the obvious answer, but, like, not... turning him away and, like, seeing this boy who is wanted and who you will get a large bounty for, and not turning him away and continuing to act as that guardian figure is, like, I feel like such a powerful motivator for Kanan, who has really only ever had one guardian figure in his life, and that's Depa, and she was just killed, and, like, just having that vacuum.
Totally. Yeah. I didn't do my, like, what about for the dummies? Can somebody give like a 25-second who is Janice Kazmir?
Oh yeah, so Janice Kazmir is a smuggler. He's a Kalarian smuggler who meets Depa and Kanan the night before they are killed. But the night before Depa is the Order 66 happens and Depa's killed, then runs into Kanan as he is wandering around the city alone and like trying not to get caught and. Ugh. Helps him and is kind to him and lets him stow away on his ship, and then they go off and have smuggling adventures.
Thank you.
I also want to point out that a while back, I think last episode when I was doing my social media shoutouts, I mentioned it, but at Celestial Intent on Twitter was saying that in response to people criticizing Kanan's characterization in A New Dawn, that once you read the Kanan comics, it's pretty obvious why he became that person, because his influence was Janice Kazmir. And I think that's significant. Janice clearly showed Kanan, like, practically, you know, the practical implications and skills for survival, but that kind of devil may care attitude and, you know, you look out for your own sort of thing, that's all Janice when we see that in Kanan once we start A New Dawn.
Well, yeah, and just to kind of, like, tie it back into fucking whatever, it just shows, sorry, I'm just, like, and to tie it back into the point of the podcast, which sounds stupid.
Yes, ma'am.
But it shows us, it's interesting because, like, this shows us how important time and place is in the Star Wars universe, which obviously we knew, but I mean, if we look at Order 66 and when it was implemented and what background we have besides this, like, this is, you know, our other view into that compared to what just the... Sorry, I'm, like, belching continually over here because I'm drinking two carbonated beverages.
It's fine.
Compared to the prequels, right? Like, that's... Episode 3 is basically what we have. Is there anything else that we have that shows, like, during Order 66 being implemented besides clones, Clone Wars, and that?
I mean, Clone Wars doesn't even quite show that.
Quite it just
touches
it,
on
right?
the origins. Right, yeah. It just touches on the origins of Order 66. Ahsoka mentions it a little bit, but it's not in that actual time when Order 66 is happening. It's Ahsoka thinking back on it. So I haven't seen that in any.
Yeah. Well, and you know, we don't have a big pool to pull from as far as experience is concerned, but we can obviously tell that, like, time and place when Order 66 went into effect obviously matters. It's like, you know, Obi-Wan goes from Coruscant to the fucking sand planet on the Outer Rim. It's like, you know,
he had sand no... planet.
Well, sorry. I know things. but Tatooine, I got it.
Wow.
I know words.
That,
I know the
that
best
was a
words.
Thing.
No, but that was literally like a slip of the tongue.
That was amazing.
I just mean, like, you know, he could not stay on Coruscant, right? And then we get Kanan's version of this where, like, he can't actually stay anywhere because they kind of... Great, like, Obi was on Coruscant and he could have gone fucking anywhere. Whereas, like, Kanan was kind of, like, on this, like, known, you know, he kind of got away, quote-unquote, and then he was, like, on the run. And it really just gives us, like, I think it gives us a really, really new and interesting account of kind of the best and worst case scenarios for when Order 66 went into effect.
Yeah, yes. Just how the same event and the same experience can be shaped by context. Absolutely.
So, yeah, that's a much better, more beautiful, succinct way to put it. Yeah, Chris, yes.
But Kristen, is it because of their choices that put them in these places, or is it the will of the Force?
I'm need
not talking
you
about the will
leave.
Of the Force.
Oh my god, leave! Anyway.
The will of the Force?
The will of the Force.
Oh my god, I'm so tired.
Sorry, that was bad. Even for me, that was bad.
Wow, anyway. Alright, so, shall we move along?
Yeah, I mean, I think...
Alright, so, I mean, just some concluding thoughts about the larger discussion we're having. So just thinking about Kanan and Rebels, like, literally in any season, at any point of himself, of his version of himself, or, yeah, any point of himself in Rebels. So just what are the significant things from his past that he's kept and what has he discarded? And we've talked a lot about this, but I do kind of want to talk about the things he's thrown away in favor of, you know, being a Jedi, a good guy and a family man and all that kind of shit, you know? I think he's given up a lot, I think, of almost freedom to be part of the rebellion because... When he's talking in the comics about, you know, just going on smuggling adventures with Canis, he says, it's kind of weird to have a blaster at my side instead of my lightsaber and abandon all these ideals I have, but it's also kind of fun. And he decides to put that aside when he goes legit Jedi again. And that's kind of interesting to me, you know? Like, obviously he's using... In A New Dawn, he's using alcohol and sex as ways to self-numb and self-medicate, but also, like, there's... Me I don't know, he's...
Sorry.
But also, like, he's 22, and that's... I mean, is that... Are those not things
that... Who doesn't
that...
fucking do that when they're 22?
Right! Like, like, is that not relatable as fuck? And then, you know, he gets into, like, this very committed partnership, and then... And they have kids, and they, you know, they have jobs, and it's just... It's kind of interesting, you know? It's like... I mean, obviously it's on a much grander scale, and there's a lot more drama involved because it's Star Wars, but it's super relatable, isn't it?
Hell yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think in terms of, like, things that he, like, obviously there's a lot that he still has, because he has his moral compass, and he have his, well...
He regains his moral compass.
He also, he still has his, like, moral compass and the fact that everything around it is relative. And you see this when he's, like, talking to General Cleave, who I don't remember what his smuggler name was.
John Doe.
John Doe, thank you. John Doe.
John Doe.
Did you get it?
Oh my god, I didn't get it! My mind is blown right now. Oh my god, right we now. Got it. Wait, Kristen, did you get it?
Yeah, well, did you hear what you just said?
I know, but I didn't get it when I was reading it.
Oh, I didn't get it when I was reading it. I just got it now when you said John Doe.
Yeah, okay, I got it now, but like, oh, fuck me. All right, so I need
to... LOL, Star Wars.
but like, when he's like, convincing Cleave John Doe to not shoot him and to help him, basically, like, kind of having this sense of, look, you may not like me, but we have a common enemy. And he kind of uses that on Bendu too, right? Like in the Zero Hour, the season 3 finale of Rebels, Bendu, who of course Keeks is terrified of.
So like, afraid.
You have, you know, look, you may not want to get involved, but they're here and they're going to kill people. So what are you going to do? And you have that, not like manipulative makes it sound bad, but that like way to get in good with people and to strategize and figure out how to turn them to his side.
Kanan always has a very good read on people. He's very good at that.
He is.
Yeah. And he keeps, I mean, he uses that kind of tactic as, you know, he tries to appeal to the better angels of their nature. And when that doesn't work, then he's got this in his back pocket, right?
Yeah. All right. Well, it seems like now is a good time to start wrapping up. So just to continue with the questions that we always like to ask whenever finishing a book or set of comics. First of all, of course, how does telling the stories using this medium add to the universe? What did telling Kanan's stories as 12 issues of comics add that couldn't have been added elsewhere?
I don't know, but the pictures were so nice and pretty.
They really were, though. Okay, so here's my thing. The art in this series was great on the most part, but I got to the last issue and they clearly needed to get a new artist, and I was like really jarring. I was like, what the hell is this? Like,
the change in art was very jarring.
It was jarring. In issue 12. It's not a complaint necessarily, it's just kind of like a what?
Yeah. For me, it was interesting because I almost feel like of everything we've read, this is the first thing where I don't feel like this couldn't have been told through other media.
Huh.
Like, I honestly feel like this could have just been an extended arc on Rebels.
In my fucking dreams, Chris.
But, like, right? Because, like, and honestly, like, part of that's a testament to Greg Weisman and, I can't remember who the artist's name was off the top of my head.
There's several different ones, and I'm really sorry that I don't remember your name.
I greatly apologize, and we'll add it to the episode description.
I'm really sorry.
But it's a testament to Greg Weisman and the artists of these comics that they do such a good job of storytelling and helping us visualize it, that this could be an animated series. Like, they do a really beautiful job of scene setting and just telling it frame by frame and doing it very explicitly, which is great and it's admirable. And it's also something that, frankly, we don't always see from comics. Like, for the Star Wars comics and the Vader comics, they didn't really go frame by frame, and they did leave that to the imagination, and that was part of their... You know, when we talked about what do they add, like, to the universe. And so, like, I feel like, and, like, not that this is a good thing or a bad thing, just that it is, I don't feel like this needed to be a comic. I feel like this story could have been told through other medium.
See, that's interesting to me because, for one thing, I will agree with you that this comic was masterfully done. The art was beautiful. The script was incredible. Like, everything about it was amazing. But I will point out that I don't know that talking specifically, like if they had talked about Kanan's past, they would have had to spend kind of a lot of time on it. Like, this filled 12 comics. That's kind of a lot. And I don't know that that's the scope of Rebels, just because what they're really focusing on in this cartoon, which is a huge difference from Clone Wars in my mind, is that the storytelling is really lean. There's not a lot of extra fat. There's not extraneous episodes. Chris and I are doing our rewatch right now, and obviously we enjoyed watching it the first time, but we're watching it now for the second time, and we're realizing how well it holds up, because they're just very slowly planting seeds that are clearly all going to culminate in something in the fourth season, and we already saw some of that bear fruit in the third season. Like, we're on season two, and we're talking about, like, the Mandalorians and Concord Dawn and all that stuff. And there are a lot of episodes that are, you know, specific, character-specific. You know, there are Hera-centric episodes, there are Kanan-centric episodes, there's Zeb-centric episodes. And you get just enough of their backstory for everything to come together, you know, for everything to match up. And I think that, you know, would it be really wonderful fan service to have all these extended backstories, have those planted in the show? Absolutely, but that's not the, like, that's not the point of Rebels. That's not the project that Filoni's working on right now. So,
yeah.
What I would really love to see is for every single Rebels character to get the kind of treatment that Kanan got through this comic series, especially Hera.
Like, I'm fucking mad that we got baby taste of young Hera and nothing else.
I know! I need a Hera comic. There, somebody in the Canary Shipping part of the fandom wrote a wonderful blog post for Mary Sue about why we need a Hera comic, and it's for all the reasons you can imagine. She has a fascinating backstory. She's a significant part of Rebels. She's a, you know, she's a leader in the rebellion. You know, she could absolutely fill out 12 issues of a comic, if not more than that. Like, I need it like I need air. Like, I need it to happen. So, I'll see if I can dig that post up and tweet it alongside this episode, because everyone should read it and make a petition, because that petition would be significantly more useful and smarter than get J.J. Abrams off episode 9.
I really want, and this kind of, like, we talked a little bit about, like, Lords of the Sith and the depiction of Ryloth that you get. One thing, and we'll talk about this in a lot more detail, I'm just gonna kind of drop this comparison here and, like, blow Kate's mind a little bit and then not talk about it anymore.
Oh, great, I'm gonna start.
But Ryloth is very much colonial Africa.
Mm. Oh, fuck!
And I really want the Free Ryloth movement as an ongoing comic series in the style of Black Panther.
Fuck yeah.
I'm gonna at Marvel about this tomorrow.
Please do it.
Like, I want that so badly.
That would be so fucking good. I have nothing else to say. That would be brilliant.
Favorite Easter egg? We all know who wasn't in this comic.
Okay, that's fine. I added my actual favorite Easter eggs during the
pod. You have a real Easter egg.
You did. Time. I'm very proud of you.
Wait, okay. Kristen, tell everyone what your Easter egg is.
Oh, my Easter egg is Rey Sloan, of course.
Yeah.
And also the Grand Inquisitor showing up. So Rey Sloan comes up. What is the word that she uses? Hobby?
My hobby.
Yes. She refers to Kanan and hunting Kanan as her hobby.
And not only that. All right, Rey Sloan. But we also get the only visual representation of a new dawn.
Fuck yeah. I know. Absolutely.
To them being in Vidian's office.
Yeah, yeah. I totally caught that while I was reading it, and then I was just like, what the fuck? And then it didn't. Again, yep. But you're so right about that.
And you have Rey Sloan arguing with the Grand Inquisitor, and it was cool to see the Grand Inquisitor.
Accurate. Yep.
Yeah. My favorite was when we were flashing back to Kanan's childhood, and he is walking with his little youngling buddies. In the background, you see Anakin and R2 walking away.
LOL.
I know. All right, I have several because I'm extra.
Get it, Kate.
So the first thing was, I think it's Stance who, because he's new, and he's addressing Depa, and he's not sure whether to call her sir or ma'am, which is just kind of this long-running joke ever since the Clone Wars, because the clones address everyone by sir, no matter what their gender is, and everyone's always just like, what? And it's just hysterical. My second one is that in the attack on the Jedi Temple, which I did not realize was this total separate attack from Barriss being a psychopath and attacking the Jedi Temple, but apparently the Jedi Temple gets bombed multiple times because security sucks, is the perpetrators of the bombing mentioned that they got their intel on the layout of the temple from a bounty hunter named Bane, which I'm assuming is referring to Cad Bane, Kristen's other blue boyfriend.
Hatman. Yes.
I love you, Hat Man. And finally...
Well, we know, sorry to interrupt, but we know where Cad Bane got those plans to the Jedi Temple too. That was in Clone Wars.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, he took them. He stole them from 3PO.
Accurate. Everyone should watch the Clone Wars. Oh, that was that really good episode where R2 gets just goes.
Yeah, he just
goes
for an oil bath. Yeah,
he goes for the robot spa. Guys, watch
it's
the Clone
best.
Wars.
It's yeah, so we should cute. Like at least put that in the description because I love the robot spa.
It's so good.
Yeah, let's do it. Anyway, I'm sorry, episode. Kate. I interrupted you. What's
no, we should talk. Always talk about the robot spa. Honestly, every episode is about the robot spa. All right. So, and then my last Easter egg is that during the bombing, Caleb's friends are in the creche, I think, of the temple, wherever where all the younglings exist. And there's this panel where I'm pretty sure we see Biff, Zat, and Gungi, who are the younglings featured in the Clone Wars arc about the Gathering, which is about how younglings go about getting the kyber crystals and building their lightsabers, and it's basically Ahsoka leading the younglings and teaching them about how, you know, all that cool technical stuff happens, and I'll include that in the episode description as well. But I'm pretty sure I saw them, which would make sense because if they're younger than Ahsoka and they're still younglings, they're probably younger than Caleb, and so I'm pretty sure it was them.
Yeah. Oh, it would make sense. Or at least Caleb's age, and we know Caleb is young to be an actual Padawan. Yeah.
Right, but he
so
already
they
has
would still be younglings.
Well, he already has his lightsaber, so I'm assuming that they're younger than him.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. Well, anyway.
All right, and that's pretty much it. So thank you all for going on this Kanara journey with us over the past 5 episodes now.
Guys, I'm so fucking sad we're done with Kanara. Like, I'm so excited to read everything else, obviously.
Kate's Kanara Quarter is coming.
Yes. Anyway.
It's very alliterative.
Yeah, well, don't worry, because Rebels will be back soon, and you can console yourself with Battlefront 2 Inferno Squad, which, as we said last week, that's our next book. We're starting next week with the start of the book through Chapter 8. We hope you read along with us. I'm super excited for this because this came out recently enough that I have not read it yet.
Right. Woo. It's true. And I'm super pumped because it's by Christy Golden and she is Star Wars novel royalty. So we are very excited to be reading our first book by her. And also as like a total side note, I just want to give a shout out to at Spectre7 on Twitter, because I was literally talking to her all day, just wailing about Kanara, and like, thank God my people exist that like I can like wail about Kanara to them and not burden Kristen with me just like sobbing everywhere and trying to give them fanfic that they don't care about.
Oh, and no, Kate's fanfic is the best.
No, but like other people's fanfic that they super super don't care about.
Yeah,
and just like, you know, I just like. Anyway, thanks for talking to me literally all day. I got like no work done, but it's fine. Like, just want to give you a shout out. Like, fucking blessings on your person, and thanks for engaging.
No, we love engaging with fellow Star Wars nerds.
Absolutely,
and that's why we do this.
I know. Like, I live on the Book Wars Pod Twitter, and I'm not sorry. Like, thank you to her. Thank you to Southern Cynic for like just like popping in, and being like, why the fuck did you talk to each other for 300 tweets all day? And we're just like,
reasons and things. Don't at me.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, before we wrap up, I have 10 seconds of things. In previous episodes, we alluded to the Disney Hyperion Claudia Gray mini issue that happened in Leia, Princess of Alderaan.
Real issue
that happened in Leia, Princess of Alderaan. Where there was an accidental Nazi slogan in the printing, and Claudia Gray apologized for it at the time. I had words about it on Twitter. I want to thank and congratulate Claudia Gray and Disney Hyperion for erasing that from the new editions of the book, for updating it on the Kindle editions of the book, presumably fixing it in the whatever printings will come. Yeah. I want to give tons of credit where credit is due, for owning that and making that change, and I am super excited to read Leia, Princess of Alderaan, and love Claudia Gray. She is Star Wars royalty, and I'm happy to move on.
Yeah, in that vein, and also not, since we mentioned probably at least 5 Jews during this episode, shout out to all of our wonderful Jewish followers and inspiration.
Shana Tova to all of God's chosen people and the rest of you, Goyim.
Yeah, I was going to say, and Chris. And Dad.
Chris, you're the worst Jew. Just stop.
No, I'm
not the worst Jew. At least he knew what was going on today and yesterday.
only because I told him. Like, oh, I knew about it. Yeah.
I always have to, like, text people. I'm like, Shana Tova.
Can I just say, so I have a coworker who was out, and I actually saw him because he was like meeting another coworker for coffee in the morning. And I was like, why are you out? And he was like, in a suit. And I was like super confused. And I realized he told me like 2 weeks ago that he takes the high holidays off. And I'm like, you literally told me this. These are literally my holidays. And I just had no idea what was happening.
The highest holidays, Chris.
This is why you need to atone, you fucking horrible Jew.
I know, I'm the worst. Anyway, that is our show. Angel. Hit us up. Hit Kate up and me and Kristen occasionally at BookWarsPod on Twitter, at BookWarsPod on Tumblr, BookWarsPod@gmail.com. Please, please, please do rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes. We need more reviews so that other people can help admire and enjoy the podcast. And we want to spread it to people and, you know, hopefully, you know, let people embrace Star Wars and embrace their nerddom.
Listen, I'm on Twitter nonstop. I know which of you listen, and I know which of you haven't fucking reviewed yet.
Oh my god.
So...
So savage.
Kate knows.
I'm only saying this because I literally, like, a third of a bottle of wine, and that's happening.
I try to post trash on the Tumblr as often as I can. I really
so
do.
So good.
But
anyway, yes.
I posted my Canera fanfic. Pay attention to me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Read that shit. That's great.
What do you mean, read that shit?
I mean, we have like four.
Listen.
We have like four followers.
We have five. Because y'all told us to use our Tumblr more often, and then y'all didn't follow us.
I was going to say.
This is spiraling out of control real quickly. So we'll let you all go while we can for Kate and Kristen. Thank you so much for listening. We are excited to be doing this. We're excited to keep doing it. And we will talk to you next week when we start reading Christy Golden's Inferno Squad.
Roll Tide.
What?
I'm just waiting for you.
You're just looking at me. All right, that's fine.
Expectantly.
No, don't do that.